And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
About 6 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater Program 105 in the series. This is August 20th, 2016. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the effervescent, vivacious, and very dimpled Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa Wolf?
Hi, Carl. You get an extra smile today because it is your birthday, August 20th, so happy birthday.
It's my birthday?
It's your birthday. You are.
Wow.
You and Jack Benny are both 39 today.
39 again.
Yes, 39. So we are going to celebrate a little bit later, and we'll post our little live party on Facebook, so stay awake with us.
Sounds great. Also, Elif Garrison, the studio booth there. She's our producer. Hi, Elif.
Hi, Carl and Lisa. How are you? Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Oh, him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you would think I would play a Boston Blackie episode on my birthday because I love Boston Blackie so much, but I'm not.
No.
No, we're playing Box 13 starring Alan Ladd. Also, The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. And Gunsmoke starring William Conrad. So we have three great radio shows on the agenda for this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming TV show APB about a billionaire tech who purchases a police precinct in the wake of a murder. And if you guessed this correctly, you will win a $25 gift certificate for Lumel Nadi.
This is a good pal of mine. I've worked with him on many projects.
Yes, indeed.
So I'm glad to hear he's on a new series.
Yes.
All right. So the number to call, 312-981-7200. This actor played Winston in the original Ghostbusters.
Maybe the reason we've been so busy lately is because the dead have been rising from the grave.
All right, if you know that voice, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Win a Lou Malnati's pizza. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back. This is Carl Amari's birthday show on the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
Maybe the reason we've been so busy lately is because the dead have been rising from the grave.
And we're going to talk to Charles from Midway. Hi, Charles.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. We're glad you're with us and you made it through. And we're hoping that you recognize that actor's voice.
I say that is Ernie Hudson.
You are right. You are a winner. We're so happy to... I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said.
What's that?
It's Ernie Hudson is correct.
Yes, yeah. Ernie Hudson. Correct.
Yeah.
Did I miss something?
No, he said it right. Yeah.
We all have the giggles. I'm so sorry, Charles. You've got to Google with us. You get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. It's home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. And you can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and check them out at loumalnatis.com. Thank you so much. We hope you listen to the whole show tonight.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Charles. All right. So we have a terrific sort of a detective adventure program to start things off, Lisa. Are you giggly?
What? Did
Are you
say
awfully
something?
Giggly tonight?
You know, Elif started giggling, and now she's like, she sent it my way, and now I can't stop.
Girls have the giggles.
We have the giggles. It's because it's your birthday.
The giggle snorts.
We have some surprises in store, and we're excited.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. 39.
Yep.
Jack Benny had it right.
Yep.
He said, I'm never growing older than 39, and I like that.
We are with you on that.
So, yeah, it was a good birthday. Nice.
Well, it's not
today.
Over yet.
No, that's right. Got another hour.
You got another 45 minutes. We're going to make it great.
We're going to start things off with Box 13. This was a mystery adventure program, kind of a detective show, too. and it starred movie star Alan Ladd. He played Dan Holliday. He was a retired newspaper man turned fiction writer, Lisa. And to gain ideas for his books, he ran an ad in the Star-Times newspaper that read, "Adventure Wanted, Will Go Anywhere, Do Anything, Write Box 13. Well, of course, you could imagine tons of people sent in, you know, letters to this because they wanted to solve a murder or they were framed or, you know, whatever the case may be. And Holliday would respond to these letters. He'd read it. He'd read one at the beginning of the show. And then, of course, that took you into the adventure. Sylvia Picker played his scatterbrained secretary, Susie, who would say, "Hey, Dan, there's another letter in box 13.
That's
and she
my,
said
that
it like kind of like that, about that octave. This was a show produced by Alan Ladd's own company, Mayfair Productions, which also produced the Damon Runyon Theater. And Ladd starred in this, produced it, and even wrote some of the scripts. He was a very talented guy. And you remember him, of course, in the movies as Shane. Remember that movie, the good Western detective Shane? And he was about my size. He used to stand on a milk crate, you know, when he was doing it. I'd sit on a milk crate to do the radio show here, and he'd stand on a milk crate.
Right. You've got your little lips in your shoes.
Yeah,
but I won't
lips.
Tell anybody. That's
no,
a big secret.
Yeah, keep that. Don't tell anyone, especially don't say it on
I'll
WGN
keep it to
radio.
Myself.
Okay, it's time for Box 13. Let's go back to January 30th, 1948. For Look Pleasant, Please, here's part one of Alan Ladd in Box 13.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of Star Times. Please meet me at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon in front of the Mercantile Building. You can do me a tremendous favor, perhaps change the whole course of my life. I shall be wearing a brown gabardine suit, and I'll be carrying a forest green suede hat.
I'll be carrying a forest green suede handbag. That was all. No name, no initials. Just the letter. Well, it didn't sound like much of an adventure. Brother, but how I could have used a crystal ball in good working order. And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Look Pleasant, Please.
Holiday doesn't look particularly thrilling, but I guess it's like the oldage.
Huh? The what?
The oldage. You know, when somebody says something smart that means something different from what it says, only it's the same thing.
Oh. Oh. On your next trip around the office, fix that one up, Susie.
What?
Never mind. Just save up your adage. Okay?
Okay.
Hey, I can just make it to the Mercantile Building by 2 o'clock. So long, Susie. There were lots of people standing in front of the building, but only one girl in a brown gabardine suit, green hat, and handbag. I didn't walk up to her right away because, well, I wanted to take a good look. And what I saw was good. Maybe about 24, slender, lots and lots of brown hair that fell down from that cute hat in a nice way. Her clothes spelled money with two capital M's. Well, I walked over to her. Good afternoon.
Oh.
I'm the man from Box 13.
Oh, thank you. Look, I know this sounds terribly foolish and silly, but I do want your help. Mr.
Holliday. Dan Holliday.
Oh, all right, Mr. Holliday. Do you have half an hour to spare?
Well, the afternoon's young, and I can wear it away to an old age. That answer your question?
Yes, it does. Do you photograph well, Mr. Holliday?
Huh? Well, my baby pictures always turned out pretty good. Of course, that was a little while ago, and I...
Look, I want you to have your photograph taken with me.
Oh, is that all?
Yes, that's all. Of course, I'll pay you for your time and trouble.
Oh, no, no, no. My time's my own, and what trouble I get into is usually my own fault.
All right, Mr. Holliday. There's a photographer in this building. He's ready for us.
Oh, by the way, what's your name?
Jones. Mary Jones.
Oh. You know, Miss Jones, a writer often spends hours thinking of the right name for the characters in his stories. But here you come along and without batting an eye, think up a very unusual one.
Do you have to know my real name?
Well, I'll live without it, but
Will you do it, Mr. Holliday?
All right, Miss Jones. Let's go look at the birdie. The photographer was ready, and it didn't take long for him to run off three shots. Miss Jones paid him, and the two of us went back downstairs. Out on the pavement, I turned to her, and I guess she read the look on my face.
Please don't ask me why, Mr. Holliday. Goodbye, and thanks very much.
Well, before I could move my feet, she was into a cab and gone. If this was it, I'd just chalked up the shortest adventure on record. There was nothing to do but go home and mark it off to experience. Yeah, that's where it should have stopped. The next morning, I walked into my office as usual and... Hey, what is this, Susie?
You could have told me.
Told you what?
I quit. You didn't trust me.
Oh, Susie, will you stop?
Oh, and the phone's been ringing all morning. Everybody wants to know about it.
About what?
Just answer the phone and find out, you...
Careful, Susie, careful. Hello.
Good morning, lover boy.
Oh, Kling. Well, how's the police department? It's bright and early. It's not good to hear your voice.
I called for information.
Yeah, what kind? What about?
Well, shall I wear my organdy hat and crepe de chine badge?
What are you talking about? What is the matter with everyone?
Well, nothing, Angel Face. All's well with the world. And about $15 million.
Everybody's crazy.
Yeah, everybody but you. Oh, nice going, Holliday. Nice going. Am I invited or don't you want cops? It might make the thing look bad, you know.
In 2 seconds, Kling, I'm going to hang up on you. What goes?
Don't you ever read the papers? Or don't you know what's going on in your life?
Now, listen, I... Oh, go arrest somebody. Now, look, Susie, what's this all about?
Look at the morning paper.
All right, I'm looking at... Holy mackerel.
She's awful pretty.
Be quiet, Susie. Prominent heiress announces engagement to Dan Holliday. Dan Holliday, that's me. That's my picture with her.
Sure it is.
I've been framed.
Oh, but you wouldn't frame a newspaper picture, would you?
Marcia Jameson, beautiful heiress to Jameson Lumber Fortune, announces engagement.
You're just a demijohn.
Don Juan.
Oh, one of the two. But you could have told me.
I could have told myself. Susie, if that phone rings anymore, don't answer it until I get this thing cleared up. One way or another. Goodbye. I got Marcia Jameson's address from the society editor at the Star Times, and a half hour later, I was ushered into the big library at the Jameson home. Sitting behind a desk was a youngish-looking man. He rose to meet me as I walked into the room.
Ah, Mr. Holliday. I'm very happy to know you.
Yeah, I wish I could say the same.
I beg your pardon?
Where's Miss Jameson?
I've asked her to come down.
Good.
I suppose I'd better introduce myself. I'm Roger Jameson, Marcia's uncle and guardian.
Well, she needs one.
I don't understand.
Well, that makes two of us. Suppose we pool our facts and get one good twisted story out of them.
Mr. Holliday, you're acting very strangely. I must say that my niece's choice of a husband is, well, peculiar.
All right, I'm peculiar. At parties, I'm a standout, but I'd like to...
Dan, darling, how nice of you to come this morning.
What did you expect?
You, of course. You've met Uncle Roger?
Yes, Marcia, we've met.
Oh, I want you two to like each other.
Oh, fine. I love everybody in the world, but
Uncle Roger, could I speak to Dan alone, please?
Certainly, Marcia. You'll stay for lunch, Mr. Holliday?
No, thank you.
Oh, yes, he will, Uncle Roger.
Good. We'll have a long talk.
Now, Miss Jameson.
Why did you come here?
Maybe you haven't seen the morning paper.
Mr. Holliday, Dan, help me.
I did, and I've got engaged. Look, Miss Jameson, I...
Marcia.
I don't know you that well. We just became engaged this morning.
Dan, it's imperative that you act as my fiancé until after the 16th of this month.
Well, what happens then?
Oh, Dan, if you'll just do what I ask until the 16th. On that day, yes, come in.
Lunch is ready any time. You are staying, Mr. Holliday.
Yes, he'll stay, Uncle Roger.
One more lunch like that, and I'd have had indigestion for the rest of my life. Uncle Roger was very curious about me. He asked a lot of questions, which Marcia answered. Then when I was ready to leave...
Well, of course, Mr. Holliday, this engagement came as a complete surprise to me. I had no idea you and Marcia even knew each other.
Well, I get around a lot, Mr. Jameson.
You'd better call me Roger, Dan.
Yes, there's nothing like being friendly.
Well, I'm sure Dan has a lot of things to do this afternoon, Uncle Roger. We'd better let him go.
Of course. We'll have plenty of time to talk about things, Dan. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Roger.
Oh, thank you, Dan. You were wonderful.
Superb, considering I didn't know where the ball was half the time.
Oh, we'll wait until the 16th, won't you?
It's 5 days from now. Meanwhile, what do I tell my friends? And where do I stack the wedding presents?
You can always say we broke up.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you something else, Dan.
Can there be anything else?
I almost wish the whole thing were true. Goodbye, Dan.
And with that, I was left standing on the elegant steps of the Jameson Castle. Well, I could have put the whole thing on the line and cleared up the situation. It'd have been easy. Just deny it. Tell the whole story. Or I could stay in the play and see what the score was. I walked down the stairs, then glanced back and looked up at a window and right into Uncle Roger's eyes. Before I could smile, he let the curtains fall back in place. Okay, that made up my mind. Curiosity killed a cat, they say. All right. Meow.
Well, Danny, welcome to the Star Times. And what brings you into the morgue?
Jonesy, I want to do some research.
So you came to the right place. Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
That's a lot of dough you're marrying.
Yeah.
Kind of sudden, wasn't it? Known her a long time?
Jonesy, I feel as though it was just yesterday. Now, get me everything you've got on her.
Huh? You're going to look up your own fiancé?
Yep.
What's the idea?
Kind of silly, isn't it?
Well, it's your business. I can put my fingers right on her stuff. You
got much?
All here. Matter of fact, I was reading about her this morning. When I heard you were marrying her, I did some work.
And?
Well, on the 16th of this month, she comes into about 15 million.
What?
Yeah. But she has to be married by then.
Oh. How come?
Her father's will says so. If she doesn't marry by the 16th of this month, this year, her 15 million goes to, Roger Jameson, uncle.
Oh.
You didn't know?
I don't know a lot of things. What else have you got, Jonesy?
She had kind of bad luck before.
Yes, what kind?
Engaged twice before, and both her fiancés had accidents.
Bad?
Yeah.
Dead?
Well, if they weren't, they had an awful dirty trick played on them.
What?
They were buried.
Okay, so I think I would probably take the risk. This woman's coming into 15 million. Her last two boyfriends were murdered. But, hey, 15 million's a lot of shekels.
Yeah, that's worth, you know,
getting killed over.
That's like every Dateline segment, right, that I've ever seen.
Exactly.
Sounds like that.
Or Snapped. Did you ever watch that show?
Yeah, but...
That show reminds me of you whenever I watch it.
Snapped. Yeah, I'm a big...
It really does.
I
fear for Dan whenever I watch that show.
I understand.
Box 13, that's Look Pleasant, Please, Alan Ladd in part one from January 30th, 1948. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. But first, these words here on WGN. We've got a lot of people text in wishing me a happy birthday. Thank you so much. I don't really text or Facebook or any of that kind of stuff, so I want to do sort of a global thank you because a lot of people have sent in very nice wishes. Thank you so much. 39, Lisa.
Well, it does make
You're way older than me.
Yeah, I know. That's, I've passed you
what's
up.
What's that like, being way, way older than
it
your
feels,
co-host?
Yeah, it feels old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jack Benny had the right idea. 39 is a good age. I'm trying to think back when I was 39, and
Were married with kids already.
Yeah,
you were already an old
back
man
then. Yeah,
yeah.
But I got to tell you, I had a very nice birthday today. It was very, very, very nice, And
how many cakes have you had so far?
Well, you guys got Aleph and Lisa got me an ice cream cake roll, which is my favorite kind of ice cream, which is chocolate chip.
Yes.
Chocolate chip. So Aleph and Lisa, you guys are the best. Thank you so much. We're going to have a slice of that when we play the next portion of Box 13.
Aleph insisted on the anchovy frosting, but I hope that's okay.
I hope that's okay, too.
I don't mind. It's fine.
It's my favorite.
Speaking of little, there's a really cool picture postcard thing on the WGN Facebook, which has pictures of Aleph and Lisa as little toddlers. How old were you in that picture, Aleph?
I was about four.
4 years old, so 6 years ago. And Lisa, how old were you?
I was six.
Six. Mm-hmm. Wow, 108 years ago.
Yes, exactly. Honestly, I think Aleph looks almost exactly the same.
She looks identical.
But she was in her little school uniform.
So cute.
And you know, it's funny, in my picture, I had my name embroidered in my dress, and they cut it out because I didn't know it was a quiz. That would have given it right away.
Oh, so cute.
What can you do?
WGN asked all of us to post pictures of us when we were kids. I couldn't find one because I was hatched.
Carl doesn't follow directions very well.
I was hatched as an adult. This is how big I was.
No, I don't think you're still waiting to become an adult. You're still a child. Yeah. I'm still waiting for that.
So there's some really great pictures on there.
They're a lot of fun.
And
Lisa, Nick DiGilio's on there. I can see
you had that kind of warped childhood like you do now, like an adult
warped?
Kind of a, well, like, you know, in a good way.
I'm warped in
warped
a good way.
Warped is good. You don't want to be like too straight. You want to be a little warped.
A little next to normal, as I call it.
Because it's fun. Warped people are fun. You're a little warped.
I'm a little next to normal, and I can see
in this picture of Lisa.
It's in the eyes, right?
I can see in your eyes that you're going, you have no idea what I'm capable of.
It's true. Right? I've always had that little attitude.
But now Aleph looks like this sweet little innocent child in the picture. It's very cool. So nothing changes. How do you see that? Just WGN
Radio? You can go to WGN Radio on Facebook. It's on our page, too. You can go to a WGN Radio Theater page. It's on our page and WGN Radio as well.
It's great, great pictures. All right, so let's get back to this. Alan Ladd is Dan Halliday on this episode called Look Pleasant, Please. Here's the conclusion to Box 13.
And now back to Look Pleasant, Please, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Halliday.
Well, there I was, all wide-eyed and innocent, engaged to marry a girl whose last two fiancés had lots of bad luck. For myself, I wasn't anxious to inherit any of that. But I had to find out a little more. So I went back to the Jameson place. The butler recognized me and let me in without announcing me. I walked down the hall and heard voices in the library. Ordinarily, keyhole listening would have been out, but, well, I heard my name. The door was open, so...
I tell you, Dan, we'll go through with it.
Oh, Dan, first name already, huh?
Oh, don't be silly, Charles. I've got to convince everyone he is my fiancé.
Well, what if he backs out before the 16th?
He won't.
What makes you so sure?
I know.
Huh?
Oh, don't be stupid, Charles.
I'm not stupid. I'm just careful.
Darling, you know better.
Well, I... All right, Marcia.
Now, you'd really better go, Charles. After all, you...
As they say in Alice in Wonderland, curiouser and curiouser. I was wondering about it when Charles came toward the door. I backed away and ducked into another room.
Well, where is Dan now?
I don't know, Charles, but you'd better get back to the office or Uncle Roger will miss you.
All right, darling. Bye. Oh,
I'll tell you when and where we can meet again, sweetheart.
You know, I'm fussy about these things.
Who the devil is...
The name's Halliday, Charlie. I'm engaged to Marcia.
How did you get in?
The front door. It works. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Charles, kissing another man's betrothed.
Well, Now, look, Dan, I...
Oh, you go on, Charles. Dan, I want to explain something.
They could stand it.
Now, look, Halliday, I...
Go on, Charles.
Oh, very well. I'll see you.
Will you come into the library, Dan?
But I've got a book.
Oh, please, I owe you an explanation.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Well, Charles is...
Charles is the man you love. Is that the line you're hunting for?
Yes.
All right, that's the first olive out of the bottle. The rest should be easy.
But it isn't. You see, Dan, your life's in danger.
Yes, I gathered that from the things I read a while ago.
You read?
Yes, the newspaper files.
Oh, Dan, if you want to, you can back out.
Uh-huh, I know. But maybe I'm more than a little curious.
But you know about my two fiancés.
Extinct.
Uncle Roger killed them, or had them killed.
And Uncle Roger knows nothing about Charles?
No.
The aforementioned uncle thinks I'm fiancé number three in order of appearance. Uncle tries to put a block on me while Charles goes for a touchdown, right?
Oh, you make it sound so brutal, heartless.
Got any other words for it? You and Charles live happily ever after. I don't.
All right, you can do as you please. I was going to ask you to go through with it, but I can't.
So before I left, I promised Marsh I'd stick it out another day. Okay, I'm a sucker. But if Uncle Roger was going to toss a curve, I'd at least be waiting for it. But before I went any further, I called on Lieutenant Kling, told him what was up. He was very sympathetic.
Oh, what a story.
Strikes you funny, huh?
Yeah.
All I want to know is, was there anything that might have tied the uncle in with the deaths of Marcia's fiancés?
No.
You're sure?
Sure I am. When I read about your engagement, I remembered her name.
And?
Those deaths were accidents.
And the uncle?
Kling.
Look, Kling, maybe he's smart.
Yeah, could be. There are lots of smart people in the world.
Oh, but I'm not one of them. Is that it?
Look, Holiday, I warned you that someday your Box 13 routine would land you in a slippery spot. Okay, it's up to you to keep your footing.
Kling, suppose I lead with my chin and Uncle Roger takes a poke at it. Would that open up the other two cases?
Sure.
All right, maybe I'll do it.
Holiday.
What?
Take it easy.
Why, Lieutenant, you sound concerned for me.
I'd miss having to hold your hand every once in a while. Well, what are you going to do now?
Call on Uncle Roger and make like a sucker.
Well, Dan, sit down, won't you?
Thanks, Roger.
You know, it's going to be quite a treat seeing Marcia married.
Yes, after two unhappy beginnings before.
Oh, you know about those? Marcia told you, I suppose.
In a way, yes.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to see me about something, Dan?
Oh, just a social call. If you're busy, I can...
Oh, no, no, not at all. I was about to leave anyway.
You know, Roger, it's very strange.
Strange? What is?
You haven't asked me anything about myself.
I don't have to, Dan.
Meaning?
I've been very busy since this morning. You see, I have quite a bit of influence, connection, so to speak.
And they told you what?
Who you are, where you live, what you do for a living. Dan, how much do you love Marcia?
I'm going to marry her.
You have quite a good income, so it's not the money you're after.
Obviously.
Dan, I'd give anything in the world to see Marcia happy. We practically grew up together. There's only 10 years difference in our ages. You see, my brother was 20 when I was born.
I see.
Marcia is my only living relative.
Oh. Then I understand your concern for her.
I'm glad you do. I want to show you something. Miss Claridge, bring in the Jameson estate papers, will you? Thank you.
What's that for?
Dan, you write mysteries, among other things. Consequently, I think you have a suspicious mind.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm Marcia's uncle, trustee of her fortune until she gets married, which must be by the 16th of this month. Now, surely in one of your stories, you must have written about a guardian who misappropriates funds, embezzles.
No, I never have.
Well, it doesn't really matter. You see, I...
The estate papers, Mr. Jameson.
I thought I asked Miss Claridge to bring them in.
Oh, well, she was busy, and I was on my way past anyway.
All right, Charles. Thank you. Oh, Charles, this is Dan Holliday, Marcia's fiancé. Dan, this is Charles Crane.
How are you?
Fine. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Is that all, Mr. Jameson?
Yes, that's all. Thank you. All right. Here are the papers.
I think you'll find every penny accounted for. Everything in order, Dan?
It looks like it.
We're going to get along, Dan. Get along beautifully.
I wonder for how long. If Uncle Roger was planning on making me number three on his hit parade, he was playing it smart. Oh, he was smooth. Mm-hmm. So smooth that I stayed at a hotel that night. If Uncle Roger knew where I lived, I might have visitors. And of course, I didn't sleep much. It was a lot of thinking to do. And it added up to something funny. The next day was Saturday, and it came in handy because Uncle Roger's office was closed. And I wanted to see something there. I called on Marcia and told her. Maybe she was a little surprised.
Why do you want to go through the files, Dan?
I've got a hunch, Marcia. Maybe Uncle Roger didn't show me the right papers.
For the estate?
Yeah, that's it. Have you got a key to the office?
I can get one, and one to the files.
Get them for me, will you? Say, where's Uncle Roger today?
Oh, on the yacht, anchored outside the harbor. You're to go there tomorrow night.
Why?
He's arranged an engagement party. Dan, if you don't want to go, if you want to back out now...
Nothing doing. I'm beginning to like this. All right, Marcia, give me the keys. Getting into the office was easy. I went to the files marked Jameson. Yeah, the papers were there all right. But not the set Uncle Roger had shown me. These were different. What little I knew about finance showed me some fancy juggling had been going on. I was checking them carefully when a neat round hole appeared in the file case alongside my head. I ducked behind the cases and peeked around just in time to see the outer door to the office close. Somebody with a silence gun played clay pigeon with me. So Uncle Roger was on the yacht, was he? When I got back out on the street, a storm had kicked up. I took a cab back to my apartment and phoned Marcia. She didn't answer. The butler said she had gone and Uncle Roger was on the yacht. Late in the evening, I received a note from Marcia.
Dan, I'm terribly frightened. Uncle Roger insisted that I come to the yacht tonight. I'm writing this note from my cabin now. I know something dreadful will happen, so please, if you can, come at once. There are speedboats at the dock to take you out. But be careful, Dan. Be careful.
It could have been a trap, but I compared the writing on this note with her first letter to Box 13. Oh, it was hers, all right. Careful, neat, precise. Okay, if this was a showdown, might as well get it over with. When I got there, the yacht was pitching and rolling like a bad bronc with a burr under his saddle. That all-day storm hadn't let up a bit. Then I was on board, but nobody was in sight. There was one cabin with a light inside. I went to it, opened the door.
Holiday, what are you doing here?
Visiting.
I don't understand. Didn't Marcia tell you the party was tomorrow night?
I like to be early for appointments. Where is Marcia?
What's the matter with you? She's not here.
Oh, yes, she is.
Have you gone crazy?
Not yet. Sit down, Uncle Roger.
Oh, all right.
You know, Uncle Roger, I don't like being shot at.
I don't know what you're talking about. Where is Marcia?
Cut it out. I...
Yes? What were you going to say? Well, what's the matter?
Have you got a gun?
Gun? Yes, but...
Get it.
Are you...
Get it fast.
It's not here. It's always in this desk drawer.
Is this what you're looking for, Uncle Roger?
Charles, what are you doing here?
And you might ask him what he's doing with your gun. It is yours, isn't it?
Looks like it.
You don't think I'd kill you with my own gun, do you, Holiday?
Very neat, Charlie. Very neat. But the crew...
Just two crewmen aboard. The rest won't be here until tomorrow. And that storm is convenient. Lots of noise. Something funny, Holiday?
Yeah. Yeah, you are. You think you're going to get by with this, don't you?
Is there anything to stop me?
What is this all about? If this is a prank...
Oh, no, Roger. Not a joke. Definitely not. Charles and Marcia had it all planned very neatly. The accidents to her other fiancés gave these two beauties the idea. Charles fakes another set of papers to look as though you were embezzling, and...
What?
Yeah, yeah. They make it look as though you can't afford to have her married by the 16th, because if she doesn't marry, then the estate goes to you.
And you're killed with my gun.
That's it. And you're killed the same way. Charles musses up this cabin to make it look as though there were a struggle. And
all right, Holliday, second guessing.
Oh, no, Charlie, I'm not so dumb. I called the police before I came aboard. You see, I guess...
You're a liar. You couldn't know.
Oh, but I could. Marcia's note gave it away.
Marcia's note?
Uh-huh. The note she was supposed to have written aboard this yacht. You see, her handwriting was neat, precise, careful. Charlie, ever try to write a neat hand on a pitching, rolling yacht? Can't be done. So I knew she wasn't aboard. And there was only one reason she'd want to get me here. To work this frame. And... Oh, hello, Lieutenant Kling.
Lieutenant...
Grab that gun.
Holliday, is he...
Yeah, Charlie's gone bye-bye for a little while.
Call the police in here, Dan. Where are they?
Are you kidding? Lieutenant Kling is probably saving his Betty by... Me, I gotta sit down. You see, Susie, they weren't satisfied with $15 million. They wanted Uncle Roger's money, too. Which they would have had if that frame had worked.
Uh-huh.
Hey, what are you doing? What do you got there?
A new camera. It's got a wonderful gadget on it that lets me get in the picture. All I do is press this button and... Oh, here, I'll show you. We'll both stand the light, see, like this. And
then... Oh, no. Not again. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures. Watch for him in his latest picture, Saigon. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville, with an original story by Russell Hughes, and original music composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker, and that of Lieutenant Kling by Edmund MacDonald. John Beale played Roger Jameson. Production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. This is a Mayfair production from Hollywood.
Terrific episode of Box 13 from a broadcast date of January 30th, 1948. Look Pleasant, Please was the title of that episode. Alan Ladd is your producer and star on that program. And Sylvia Picker playing Susie, his scatterbrained secretary. And,
are you looking at me like that for?
No, you're not scatterbrained at all. Not
I'm
at
not
all.
Scatterbrained. Not I'm a lot least. Of things,
no,
but I'm not
scatterbrained.
Scatterbrained
is not one of them. Well, you have two brains, though.
That's
Lisa
true.
Does have two brains.
So they could get a little mixed up sometimes.
Yeah, Lisa has two master's degrees and two brains.
Yeah, well, you have to. That's how they're in tandem.
Yes, they really are. Well, I hope you enjoy that. Box 13. In our next hour, we're going to tune into The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley, and then A Western Adventure of Gunsmoke. And you know what, Lisa? We've talked about this before. There was a lot of Westerns on radio, but some of them were adult Westerns. They were aimed at adults. Other ones, like The Lone Ranger and Red Rider and Hop Along Cassidy, these were sort of a juvenile Westerns. But this was probably the best adult Western on radio, and William Conrad starred as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. Of course, it made a transition to television with James Arness. Was one of the most popular Westerns on TV. We have a radio adventure for you in our third hour. So we will be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a quick break. This is my era, Lisa.
Yes, I know.
Did a lot of disco dancing to this song back in the 1940s.
I'm
trying to think. Well, let's see. I was born in 63. I was discoing around 80s. 17 years old. So 80s,
yeah.
1980, 81, 82.
83, 84, 85.
And I used to go to the Stay Out discotheque because I was a rebel, and it was called Stay Out, so I couldn't.
Right.
Of course, I couldn't stay out. And this is, who is this now? Is this Donna Summer?
That's Donna Summer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's great. Donna Summer. And she was, yeah, someone. And then remember, she had Last Dance.
Of course.
This is your last dance.
Chance for
and,
love.
And so I would be looking around the room, and all the girls.
That
had,
would be it.
They
that
were all gone
it.
About that time, and they were right. like, they all
you,
went
you
home.
Were looking, you were looking for all of the bad girls.
Yeah, that's
oh,
right.
There
bad
you go.
That was her other song.
That's right. Bad girl.
Talking about it.
Bad
girl. And the Tramps, Disco Inferno.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, boy, David knows his Donna Summer songs.
And Voyage,
Voyage.
America.
Yeah.
And there was a disco version
Did
of
you guys
Chicago's
go out
I'm a Man. No, I used to be a club disc jockey at one point.
Oh.
You never were at the Stay Out in Stone
my,
Park?
I was on the East Coast when all of that was going on. I didn't get here till 97.
Gotcha.
So disco had already died.
Carl, yeah. Did you ever go to the Snuggery?
No,
oh,
I don't
think
so.
Does Lisa have some history?
No, not me.
No.
But if I saw Carl, I probably wouldn't have even remembered.
I went to Faces a couple of times
Faces?
Out here. Yeah, in Chicago. Faces, that was like a really cool place to go.
I don't think I was that cool.
But when I was 17 years old, it was every Saturday night, it was Stay Out Discotheque in Stone Park.
So how did it work out for you?
Vince Lombardi. We would spend about 7 or 8 hours getting ready. And then we'd go there for about 3 hours.
And how was it?
You know, pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, not bad.
Not bad.
I can write a, you know, very small book, probably one chapter
Great.
About it. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
It'll be one chapter in my book someday.
One day.
When I write the book.
I'm going to help you. I'll be your ghostwriter.
Ah, those were the days, Lisa.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the WGN Radio Theater. It's our second hour. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. And then this hour, we're going to tune into a fun comedy with William Bendix as Chester A. Riley on The Life of Riley from 1945. In our third hour, which will be from 1 o'clock till 2 o'clock in the morning, we have a good Western on Gunsmoke. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Broken, about a Dallas divorce attorney whose life begins to unravel when his sister resurfaces. Ooh.
Now, Lisa picks these people, so I can't take any credit for it. This is another person that I've worked
know
with.
I know that.
This guy is so wonderful. He's done a lot of my projects over the years.
I know.
Such a great guy.
So if you get this correctly, you will win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. And my very favorite as well.
Number to call, 312-981-7200. This actor starred as Ironside in the 2013 TV reboot.
Even with both of them dead, wasn't enough, was it?
All right, do you know who that actor is? Very deep voice actor there. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to Carl's birthday show of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
Even with both of them dead, wasn't enough, was it?
And let's talk to Monique from Highwood. Hi, Monique.
Monique?
What?
Monique, hello.
Hi.
Can you name that celebrity for us?
Blair Underwood.
You are right, Monique.
Did she say Blair Underwear?
Yes, she did.
Okay,
I think she said underwear. Did you say underwear?
All right.
Underwood.
You are right. Blair Underwood is correct. You are a winner. You've won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish. Do you love Lou Malnati's?
Sounds like she does.
I'm guessing you're a Lou Malnati's fan. Monique, we are so thrilled that you called in to win, and congratulations. That is Chicago's best, and you can check them out at loumalnati's.com.
All right. Thanks, Monique.
Thanks, Lisa. Happy birthday, Carl.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Monique.
My good pal, Blair Underwood, and he has done a ton of Twilight Zones for me. He appeared in my audio Bible, The Truth and Life audio Bible, as Mark. He was amazing in it. He is just the nicest guy in the whole wide world. And I
knew that you had worked with him.
And he's got a new series coming out?
He sure does. Were you listening?
Yeah, no, not really. I don't listen to you, Lisa.
I know you don't. It's a TV series. It's called Broken.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know what? A nicer man doesn't exist. He's a terrific guy. And Ernie Hudson, too.
I've worked with him for many years. You're going to like the next one, too, although it's a girl.
You know, I see you you pick them.
Oh, I pick them all right.
Luckily, this is radio.
Pick them. Oh, no,
luckily,
we've got cameras. You can watch everything around
all right.
here.
It's time for The Life of Riley. Chester A. Riley. What a terrific series this was. William Bendix starred as the hilarious airplane riveter and family man. It was created by Irving Brecker. It premiered in 1944. And his wife's name on the show was Peg. She was played by Paula Winslow. And his kids were Babs and Junior. His catchphrase was, "What a revolting development this is!" And it became part of the lexicon. You know, back then, people would, you know, in a situation, be like, "What a revolting development this is!" Because he would say it on the show pretty much every week. Now, there was an actor on the show, Lisa, by the name of John Brown, a terrific voice actor. He was actually he was Broadway on the Damon Runyon Theater. And he played two roles on every episode of The Life of Riley. He was his co-worker and next-door neighbor, Jim Gillis. And he was the town's friendly undertaker, Digby O'Dell. And when I licensed these shows from Irving Brecker, and I remember one time we were at his apartment in California talking about The Life of Riley. And he told me, you know, there was a time early in the show when the sponsors were going to cancel. They were going to cancel this program. It was only on the air for about a year. The ratings were not good. He's like, and we just couldn't figure out how to turn that corner, you know? And then they hit upon this idea, John Brown playing this friendly undertaker. And it became a sensation. And you'll hear when he does appear on the show, the audience kind of goes wild. Yeah. And this saved the whole show, this character of the friendly undertaker and all the jokes, the morbid jokes, you know, but it was all in fun. And so that's really what The Life of Riley has can thank for saving it, because it would have been one season and gone. So in 1949, it moved to television, but William Bendix was not able to play the part on TV for the first season. So Jackie Gleason was television's first Riley, and then Bendix took the reins for six seasons thereafter. We have a comedy radio episode for you now, January 7th, 1945. It's called The Silver Gloves Amateur Boxing Contest. Here's William Bendix in part one of The Life of Riley.
Here he is, folks. During the day, he's William Bendix, the movie star. But every Sunday night for the last 52 weeks, he's been the star of The Life of Riley. Now we're going to hear a few words from this one-year-old radio star. Say something, Bill.
Da-da. Goo-goo, da-da.
The American Meat Institute presents The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. The Meat People of America, providing a great food for a great nation. 5 million farmers and ranchers raising fine meat animals. 600,000 men and women in more than 3,500 meat packing plants. 400,000 meat retailers. All doing their level best to fill your daily needs. And now, on behalf of all these, the American Meat Institute brings you The Life of Riley. Like most fathers, Chester A. Riley, California war worker, is full of pride in his son, Junior, and never seems to learn that pride goeth before a fall. Right now, Riley's at it again. He wants Junior to enter the Silver Gloves Amateur Contest and is out in the backyard trying to sell Junior the idea. Listen.
But, Papa, I don't think I box good enough to be in the Silver Gloves Contest.
Oh, don't be so modest, Junior. Let me be the one who's modest. With the benefit of my training, you can't possibly lose. And don't forget, you'll be wearing the colors of the BPLA.
The BPLA, Pop?
Well, sure, my club, the Brooklyn Patriots of Los Angeles. All the social and athletic clubs are entering some kid. It's for charity. And the BPLA is counting on you.
Yeah, and the referee will be counting over me.
No, No, he won't, Junior. I happen to know the referee, Muggsy Donovan, personal. And, Junior, he can't count up to 10. Besides, I'm your manager, your trainer, your sparring partner, and your father. And all four of us say you can't lose.
But, Pop...
And another thing, Junior. Boxers are very popular, especially with girls of the opposite sex.
They are, Pop?
Girls like men who can protect them. A man who can fight as a knight in shining armor. A regular Sir Gallagher or Lunchalot.
Girls like boxers, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Pop, I'm entering the bout.
Attaboy. Now, come on, we'll start your training right away. First, I'm going to show you a tricky uppercut. I call it my Sunday punch.
Why, Pop?
Well, when I hit a fellow with this punch, he always lands on his weak end.
Okay, Pop, go ahead and show me.
Now, watch me. First, I feint with my left, eh? Then with my right, I bring up a haymaker like this. Where are you, Junior?
Over here, behind you.
Oh.
Listen, Pop, can't the other fella hit you when your legs are all tangled up like that?
Sure, I'm wide open for a right hook, but if he tries it, I'll block it with my jaw. Now, you try it on me. Look, I'll get down on my knees so I'm more your size. Go ahead.
Gosh, I don't want to hurt you.
I just figured that I'm your sparring partner as well as your trainer. Forget I'm your father. Don't worry, I'll duck. Come on, let me have the old 1-2. Come on.
Well, okay. 1-2. Gosh, Pop, it worked.
Yeah. You see, your trainer was so busy watching your style that your sparring partner forgot to duck. And I think your father is getting a black eye. Come on, Peg, let's finish up the dishes fair.
Huh? Honest, Riley, I don't understand what's going on in that mind of yours.
Now, Dumplin', don't worry about my mind. It's very simple.
First you invite Junior to hit you in the eye, and then as a reward, you do these dishes for him.
Well, I don't want Junior to do no more dishes for a while. Dishwater's liable to soften up his hands.
Hasn't done much for me. Well, I'm telling you for the last time, I'm not going to let our boy grow up to be a prize fighter with those broccoli ears.
Not broccoli, cauliflower. And don't worry, Junior can take care of himself. He's got my fighting blood in his veins.
Your fighting blood. Look at that black eye he gave you.
I let him hit me to give him confidence. I think the swelling's going down a little, though. When I close my good eye, I can very dimly see the icebox there.
That's the gas meter you're looking at. Oh, Riley, don't you think it's dangerous to let Junior fight?
Junior's my boy also. Remember, a father's got mother love, too. Why, with me training Junior, nobody's going to lay a glove on him. It's like I was saying to Jim Gillis.
So that's it. You and that Jim Gillis have been boasting to each other again.
Now, Peg, listen.
And you said that Junior was a better fighter than Gillis's boy, Egbert.
This time you got me all wrong. It was Gillis that said Egbert was a better fighter than Junior.
Oh, the idea. Two grown men getting two little boys to fight each other.
Well, in the first place, it ain't fighting. It's boxing.
What's the difference?
Well, boxing's more gentlemanly. When you knock the guy's teeth out, you wear gloves.
Well,
And in the second place, Egbert don't figure in this at all anyway, because only Junior is representing the BPLA. Boy, is Gillis going to be jealous when he hears about it.
Oh, Pop, I finished my homework. Let's go and enter me in the box.
Okay, Sonny. Peg, we're going down to see the boxing promoter, Rosin Face Moore. Rosin Face is managing the tournament.
Oh, I give up. Now, Riley, look, promise me one thing.
Yeah.
Arrange it so that the boy who fights Junior won't hit him.
Oh, sure. Come on, champ.
All right, next entry.
Mr. Moore, I want to sign up for the schoolboy division of the Silver Gloves.
Schoolboy?
Yeah.
I'm afraid you're a little late. You should have been here 25 years ago.
Oh, I ain't the schoolboy. I'm entering my son here, Battling Kid Riley. He's representing a BPLA.
Oh, you're too late, Riley. We already have one entry from that club.
Well, gee, Pop, how can that be?
Well, it can't.
Well, it is. Mr. Gillis entered his son Egbert for the BPLA 5 minutes ago.
Why, the double-crosser, the traitor. That kid Egbert Gillis can't represent the BPLA. He's a cream puff.
Just a minute, Riley. I heard that crack, and I don't like it.
Relax, Gillis. That Egbert of yours couldn't fight his way through a sheet of Kleenex.
He could so, but who can get Kleenex today?
Look at this black eye my junior gave me. I don't see your boy giving you no black eye.
Well, of course not. I brung him up better. He only fights kids his own size.
Is that so? Well, he better not pick on my junior. My boy can lick your boy with one of my hands tied behind your back.
Why, you won't...
Now, wait a minute.
Just a minute. Just a second, man. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll let down the rules and let both boys represent your club against each other. Then the winner will be the champion of the BPLA.
Hello? Oh, hello, Pointy. Well, sure, I think Junior will win. What? Oh, okay, Pointy. Thanks for tipping me off. So long. Peg, guess what?
Guess what?
I just heard that Jim Gillis is having his kid trained by Slug Malloy, ex-welterweight champion of the Santa Monica Pier.
A professional? Oh, is that fair?
What a snaky thing to do. What an underhanded trick. Only a shifting, conniving weasel would do a thing like that. Why didn't I think of it?
Riley... I'm worried about this fight.
Oh, well, don't worry, Dumplin'. I promise you that Junior won't get hurt. Why, it's such a sure thing I've been laying 3-1 that Junior will win.
3-1?
Yeah.
Where are you going to get the money to cover all those bets?
Well, who needs money? I bet Muley Durkin 3 mows of his lawn to 1 trim of our hedge. All I hope is Junior watches his training. Well, what do you have for lunch?
Let me see. 2 sandwiches and a glass of milk and a chocolate eclair.
A chocolate eclair. Again with the custard. If you must feed them a class, please see that they're filled with meat. Oh, there's Junior now. Is that you, Champ?
Yeah, it's me.
Well, Peg, start dishing out that grub. And, Champ, sit down at that table and start packing it away. Go ahead, kid.
I'm not hungry. Yeah,
well, Junior, you got to build up your weight or Egbert's liable to beat you.
No, he won't.
That's the way I like to hear you talk.
Because I'm not going to fight Egbert.
Junior... I didn't quite understand you. I can't hear with my mouth full.
I'm not going to fight Egbert.
Well, I think he's being sensible. I'm glad that's settled.
But it ain't settled. What do you mean you won't fight Egbert? Why won't you?
Well, I can't tell you why, Pop. Please don't ask me.
Junior, there's only one type of a boy who runs away from a fight.
I can't help it. I don't want to fight. I just want to be left alone.
Junior, come back here. Peg, I know why he's running out. He's scared. He must have heard how Egbert was being trained by a professional. My own son, a coward.
Oh, come now. How do you know?
I just got a feeling. You know me. I'm psychopathic.
Riley seems to have lost the first round in his fight to make Junior a Silver Glove champ. Round 2 follows in just a moment.
All right, that's the first portion of The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. And I think you're playing Peg on this, right, Lisa?
Yes.
This was one of your first acting jobs back in 1945, January 7th. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. That's the great Roger Badish. Were you discoing to this kind of music back in the 70s? Oh, he was doing the robot there. Yeah, Roger.
Yes, I was discoing.
Go, Roger,
up in Highwood, there was a discotheque behind. It was owned by a restaurant, and it was in a section behind the restaurant. And I forgot what the name was, but that's where everybody who was anybody.
That's where you were getting your groove on.
I was getting my groove on.
Was it Scornavacos there?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
See?
Lisa was there. Maybe yeah, you guys...
I'm sure we bumped into each other.
Oh, I'm sure
maybe
we did.
Maybe you did the hustle.
Somebody hustled me out of there, I'll tell you that.
What was that dance where you bumped? Was it called the bump?
It was called the bump, yeah.
Yeah. Did you use the bump, Carl?
Yeah, I bumped.
Yes, you bumped.
Better believe I bumped.
I got bumped to the back of the room.
When that song was on, I was like, let's bump.
Roger and I were at Scornavacas together back in the
day. Yeah, look at that. All right. And yeah, then, that was it was fun.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
We had fun there, didn't we, Rob?
Yeah, we did.
I wore my platform shoes.
Oh, here
there.
We go.
That way everyone could see it, right?
My silk shirt.
<That's right>.
My silk shirt and my Italian horn.
Yep.
And my not hairy chest.
Well, you had to have had a hairy chest if you had your shirt open with the horn hanging down.
It's a little hairy now, but back then, no.
No? Oh, okay.
Did you shave?
No, I just didn't have enough male hormones or something. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Has anything changed since then?
Yeah, I've got more male hormones now. I'm older.
I didn't know.
He's grown up now.
Are you sure, Roger?
I'm a big boy now, Lisa. I'm a big, big boy.
I'm not sure sometimes.
All right. Well, it's fun to reminisce about the disco days. All right. Well, it's time for part two now of William Bendix on The Life of Riley.
To The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. It's round two of Riley's struggle to persuade his son to meet young Egbert Gillis in the Silver Gloves boxing tournament tonight. Junior's last-minute refusal to fight left Riley down, but not quite out.
Peg, I guess I should never have depended on Junior. I guess I'm just a big dope. Well, you might have the courtesy to deny it.
Why should I? You got yourself into this. Now take the consequences.
Yeah. I can just see myself paying off the bet I made with Ike Shanahan, the barber.
What? You made a bet with the barber, too?
Yeah. If Junior wins, Ike's got to give me a 6-month supply of haircuts. 3 haircuts. If Junior loses, I got to cut my own hair and stand in the window of Ike's barbershop with a sign around my neck which says, "Let Ike cut your hair or someday you look like this."
Next time, don't bet.
Junior can't treat me this way even if I am his father. I'm going to have another talk with him. Junior, come in here. Peg, where are you going?
I've got the dishes to do.
All the ships are deserting the sinking rat.
What do you want, Pop?
Junior, you've been a great disappointment to me, you know that?
I know.
And you still won't tell me why you won't fight Egbert tonight, huh?
Well, I can't tell you, Pop.
Well, you don't have to, because I know why.
You do?
Sure, you're just afraid to spoil your good looks. But you shouldn't be, Junior. I'm the one who should be afraid, because after all, you got them from me.
Honest, Papa, I ain't afraid of spoiling my looks.
But, Junior, how can you run away from a fight? You were born in Brooklyn, Junior.
I'm sorry I got you in this jam.
I don't care about myself. I don't even care about Gillis and the boys ribbing me, but what I can't take is the thought that my own son is a...
I'm not a coward, Pop. Honest, I ain't. It's something else.
Yes, Junior?
It's on account of Marilyn Morris, my girl. She said if I went in that ring, she'd never speak to me again.
Is that all?
Oh, don't laugh, Pop. You don't know what it means to be in love.
You better not let your mother hear that. I know plenty about love, and it's just like General Sherman said, love is war. Listen, Junior, suppose Marilyn said she'd let you fight.
Boy, if she only would, Pop, I'd get in that ring and tear Egbert to pieces. He's always trying to get Marilyn away from me.
Junior, get your trunks and bathrobe together and be ready to leave for the arena on a minute's notice.
Sit down, Mr. Riley, won't you?
Oh, thanks, Marilyn. Now, you sit down, too, huh?
Now, what did you want to see me about, Mr. Riley?
Well?
Well?
Well,
Well?
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
Same to you, too. Well, Marilyn, I believe in coming right to the point. I'm here on a sort of a peace mission. You gotta let Junior fight tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I don't approve of fighting.
But, Marilyn, fighting builds a boy up. It makes a He-Man out of him. And girls like He-Men. Look at Van Johnson. Look at Frank Sinatra. Oh, no, look back at Van Johnson.
Well, maybe that's so, but I just don't want Junior's ears to look like Brussels sprouts.
Cauliflower.
Mr. Riley, you may as well know now as later. I'm planning to make Junior my husband.
You are, huh? Well, in that case, I'll have to double his 50-cent allowance.
Oh, we won't get married for a little while.
Oh.
We're thinking of June 9th,
1956. Well, if you're going to marry him, you should let him box, because boxing prepares a man for married life. I mean, if Junior learns now how to take it on the chin when he's married and older, he can take it on both of his chins. So, what do you say? Let Junior fight, huh?
Oh, Junior's perfectly free to do what he wants. All I said was, if he fights, I'll never speak to him again.
You call that freedom? Marilyn, are you sure you were never married before?
Why, Mr. Riley.
Oh, I was only kidding. Listen, Marilyn. Marilyn, if you don't let Junior fight tonight and he loses by default, Junior won't have no self-respect. And when a woman makes a man lose his self-respect, he can never forgive her.
Oh, I never looked at it like that. I wouldn't want Junior to... Mr. Riley, I've changed my mind.
Oh, that's great.
It's my duty to see that Junior wins.
Oh, don't worry. I think he'll win.
I know he'll win.
Oh, you're a swell kid, Marilyn. And it's okay for you to marry Junior. I'm hereby giving you his hand. The one with the paycheck in it. Oh, Mr. Moore, how's a big promoter, huh?
Fine, Riley, fine. We're going to have a capacity crowd tonight.
Yep.
A lot of people want to see your boy mix it with young Gillis.
Ah, sure. All my pals are out there, too, and battling Kid Riley is all set.
Where's Moore?
Right here, Mr. Gillis. What's wrong?
Where's Eggbite? Have you seen my Eggbite? Where is he?
Don't you know?
No. The last I know, he was going over to see some little kid, Marilyn Morris. I just called her. She said he never showed up. The kid is missing.
Huh? He's smart.
Now, listen, Gillis. You're putting me in a fine spot. There's a big crowd upstairs waiting to see the Riley Gillis bout. If we don't give him one, we got to turn back the money. The charity loses, and I look like a heel.
Well, my Junior's here. He ain't afraid.
My Eggbite ain't afraid. He's just missing.
Hey, I wish I could find a substitute fight.
I wouldn't be surprised if Eggbite was kidnapped.
Now, why would anybody kidnap Eggbite?
Somewhere I got to find another
fight. I know why. And I think I know who done it.
Gillis, who do you think you're looking at?
Who do you think I'm looking at?
I asked you first.
Somewhere I gotta find another... Wait a minute, I got one right under my nose.
You wanna make something out of this, Gillis?
I do if you do.
Okay, I dare you to knock this chip off my shoulder.
There ain't no chip on your shoulder.
Well, I dare you to put one on.
Now, wait a minute, gentlemen, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Never fight for nothing. Now, there's a big crowd upstairs waiting to see the Gillis-Riley bout. Well, they're going to see it.
But the kids can't fight. His kid ain't here.
Well, your name's Riley, ain't it? And his name is Gillis, ain't it? I'm putting you two in the ring. Gillis versus Riley, just as advertised.
Now, wait a minute.
Lie quiet on this table, Pop, so I can rub you down. You ain't nervous, are you, Pop?
Who, me? No. If you notice me shaking, I'm... just loosening up my muscles. Why don't we keep going?
Pop, don't forget your old Sunday punch.
Yeah, but this here is only Saturday.
Well, what's worrying you, Pop?
Huh? Oh, nothing. I'm only thinking about poor old Gillis. Him and me have been pals for years. Now I gotta go upstairs and punch him all over the ring. I hope.
Okay, Riley, let's go.
Now?
Yeah, that crowd won't wait much longer. Come on, let's get into the ring.
Okay, I'm ready.
Well, don't be so nervous.
I ain't nervous. Wait, where's my gloves?
They're tied to your hands.
Where's my hands? Never mind, I won't need them. Let's go.
Marilyn will come in, dear.
Thank you, Mrs. Riley. May I hear the fights on your radio? They won't let me listen at home.
Why, yes. Come into the living room. But I thought you didn't like boxing, Marilyn.
I don't, but I just want to hear them announce the junior wins by default.
How do you know he'll win by default?
You'll see.
Well, I'll tune the radio in.
And now, folks, it's time for the main bout. Gillis versus Riley. This is the fight we've been waiting for, folks.
They'll have a long wait.
Oh, listen, something's happened.
And now the two contestants are climbing into the ring. Here's Riley, and here's Gillis.
I don't understand it. Egbert can't be there.
Official weights of the two contestants. Gillis, 180 pounds.
What?
And Riley weighs in at 195.
100? What's happened to Junior?
Getting a big cheer, folks. After all, they stepped in at the last moment to take the place of their son, Junior Riley and Egbert Gillis.
Oh, Marilyn, it's not Junior and Egbert. It's my husband and Mr. Gillis.
The men are fighting each other. I knew it couldn't be Egbert because I locked him in our cellar.
You did what?
So Junior could win by default.
Well, there's the gong. The fight is on. Now, if they'll only come out of their corners. Their stools. They rush each other and oh, they miss each other and land on the ropes. This is the battle of the century. These bums couldn't hit each other in 100 years.
Oh, dear, this is dreadful.
Now the referee pulls them back in the center. Now they spar. Go, Riley, let's go with a haymaker and wham, the referee is down. The referee is up again. Now he's down again. It was Gillis got him that time. Now both fighters are picking up the referee. Oh, Gillis trips Riley. They drop the referee. Riley slugs Gillis. Gillis slugs Riley. The referee is up. No, he's down. No, they're all down. I can't see what's going on. Well, that's the end of round one, folks, and what a fight. I wish you could be here. Well, this is for charity, folks. They say charity begins at home, and that's where Riley and Gillis wish they were.
And that's where they ought to be, those two.
And remember, folks, these prize fights come to you through the courtesy of Digger O'Dell, the friendly undertaker, whose motto is... When you think of boxing, think of me. Round two. The men come out. No, wait. They're not coming out. That last round seems to have winded them. Well, this will be a no decision bout unless... Yes! Yes, Riley is coming out. Punchy, but game. Now Gillis is up, too. Oh, what a fight. They stagger to the center. No! Gillis is down. But Riley never touched him. He must have fainted. Riley is counting over Gillis. Oh, I forgot to say the referee didn't come out for this round. 3, 4.
My, I thought prize fights lasted longer than this.
I think they're supposed to, but not with those two in there.
7, 8, 9, 10. It's all over, folks. Riley is holding up Riley's hand. The winner, Chester Riley. Come over here to the microphone, Riley. Say a few words to the radio audience. What's the matter, Riley? You too winded to talk?
No, I got plenty of wind. Only it goes in and out of my mouth too fast. It was a great fight, folks, and the best man won. I feel fine. Gillis never laid a glove on me, but if Jake of Jake's Meat Market is in the house, I want to order 2 steaks, 1 for each eye. Folks, this is William Bendix getting personal for just a moment. Tonight is something of an occasion for all of us who are part of the life of Riley. This is our 52nd program. And even with Riley's arithmetic, that makes us 1 year old. Thank you. For a year now, I've wanted to pay public tribute to the fine actors who comprise our regular cast. First, Riley's wife, Dumplin, played by a very, very pretty gal, Paula Winslow.
Oh, Bill Bendix.
When television comes, her blush will be a sensation. Riley's son, Junior, is Conrad Binion, and Jim Gillis is John Brown. Not heard in tonight's story are Riley's daughter, Babs, who is Sharon Douglas, Waldo Binney, played by Dink Trout, Digger O'Dell, the Merry Undertaker, played also by John Brown, and, of course, our announcer, Ken Meat is a Yardstick of Protean Foods, Niles. For all of us, it's been a pleasant privilege to meet you at your radio each Sunday. And if we've succeeded in giving you a smile or two, well, that's the nicest birthday present we could possibly have. Good night, and see you next week.
Follow the Life of Riley, presented by the American Meat Institute, next week at the same time. William Bendix plays Riley by arrangement with Hal Roach. The Life of Riley is written by Ashmead Scott, Alan Lipscott, and Reuben Shipp. It is directed by Don Bernard, with music by Lou Kozloff. Our engineer is Thor LaCroix. This is Ken Niles saying, see you next week.
This is the Blue Network.
7:30 at KECA, Los Angeles.
So that's the Life of Riley. You heard the announcer there talking about William Bendix being under contract with Hal Roach. Hal Roach did all of the Little Rascals, and he did a lot of the Laurel and Hardy movies. But that Hal Roach, he used to bug a lot of people, you know?
I could see why.
Could you see why? Mm-hmm. Also,
yeah.
Part of the charm of this show is the corn factor. Don't you know that by now, Roger?
Oh, yeah.
It's very, very corny. I like to be corny.
That's what the charm was. It was funny.
You know what? Yeah. Back in these days, it was a wholesome, just simpler time, mm-hmm. and corn was good.
Corn was plenty.
And I like corn.
The corn is as high as and what?
Elephant
Carl?
Size.
Thank you.
Nothing wrong with a corny joke, everyone.
He doesn't even know what I'm talking about.
And you know what? Lisa has some huge corns on her feet. You should see these things. They look like they have their own zip code.
You're out of your gourd.
Do you have a hacksaw up there?
Huh?
You can bring down here. I can
got an axe.
Help get rid of these things for her.
Yeah, they kind of go with the two heads. Like a really
a very
attractive
bulbous
woman.
Double head Quasimodo look.
You're lucky I have a good sense of humor.
Funny as it is.
You heard William Bendix there say protean.
Yes.
Protean food instead of protein. That was like sort of an antiquated way of saying protein back then. Protean. A protein food.
Well, either that or he just made an error.
No. They said that back then.
That's how they said it.
Yeah, it was sponsored by the American Meat Institute, which I know is a company you founded,
yes,
Lisa.
I'm very big on
you
meat.
You like meat so much.
Yeah.
good episode, The Life of Riley. And they sort of came out and talked about themselves and their real names. And it was cool at the end of that show. January 7th, 1945. Because it was on the air 1 year. It was a birthday program there on The Life of Riley.
A birthday program?
It was. It just happened.
I wonder who else might have a...
Well, it's over, right?
Well,
it's over.
I wasn't here.
It's been over a whole hour, so you missed it. Thanks a lot, Roger.
But we've got leftovers for you.
Yeah.
We saved a little crumb
in the corner. A little crumb?
Yeah.
Okay. So. I played... Remember, we've done the lawn mowing episode in our radio group, and I played Digger.
Digger O'Dell,
yes.
The friendly undertaker. Yes. That's a great role.
It was fun.
All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Thanks, Lisa. All right, it's time for Gunsmoke. It was an adult Western. It was created by Norman McDonald and John Meston. And it came to radio in 1952, lasted all the way to 1961. And it was stories in and around Dodge City, Kansas, set in the mid to late 1800s. And the main character was U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon, played by William Conrad. His deputy was Chester Proudfoot, played by Parley Bear. Parley Bear was the voice of the Keebler Elf, and he was also the mayor on the Andy Griffith Show.
Oh.
Remember the mayor? Yeah, that was him. And Howard McNear, who was, Andy, yes, he was Doc Adams on this show. So there was two of the Andy Griffith Show stars were on Gunsmoke. Georgia Ellis was Kitty Russell. She was a saloon girl owner, and she was sort of the, we kind of know what she was. We won't say what she was on the radio here, but, you know, she was, she was the hostess there. That's good enough. And Dylan was a lonely, isolated man toughened by a hard life, and you kind of heard it in his voice. You know, he was kind of lonely. But he was friendly with Kitty, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It was adapted for television in 1955 and it ran all the way to 1974, but with an entirely new cast. James Arness was Dylan. It was ranked number one from 1957 to 1961. And I always thought this was fascinating. James Arness was the brother of Peter Graves from Mission Impossible. They looked nothing alike. Mm-hmm. That's Roger in the background. Hang on a second, Roger. Say that again. Sorry.
You know who they tried to get to play the role first?
Yes. Yes, say I do. John Wayne.
That's right.
Yeah, John Wayne.
And Wayne suggested.
That's right.
James
Arness. He did. Yeah, he introduced James Arness in the very first episode. Did you know that?
I did not see the first episode.
Yeah, he did. All right, so we have a terrific radio episode for you now from November 14th, 1952. It's called The Square Triangle. It stars William Conrad. Here's part one of Gunsmoke.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Quiet night, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. Except for that coyote. He's wailing his head off out there. Mad at the moon, I guess.
Or in love, maybe.
Oh?
Yes, sir, the way I've noticed it, any time you find a man or an animal out squalling around in the dark, it's usually love.
Yeah, but this one sounds kind of mournful, Chester.
Well, sir, love is mournful sometimes, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, so I've heard.
Matt? Is that you?
Oh, good evening, Miss Morley.
How have you been, Matt?
Oh, fine. Fine, thank you. You, down here on Front Street this time of night alone?
I'm looking for Red Lawson. He's a new man, works for Al. Al's meeting him sometime after midnight, and they're going out on a cattle buying trip. I want to talk to him first. You satisfied?
Well, it's just that this is no place for a woman alone, Miss Morley. Maybe you better go home.
There are other women down here.
They belong here, Miss Morley. They work here.
Oh, don't be so stuffy, Matt. And call me Ava for once. Everybody else does.
Well, your husband might take exception to that, Miss Morley.
Now, you're blaming me for what happened before, aren't you?
I'm not blaming you for anything, Miss Morley.
I didn't tell him to get into a gunfight over me. Wasn't my fault.
I didn't say it was. Chester, you better see that Miss Morley gets home, all right?
Yes, sir.
I can get home by myself.
My, she's pretty as a picture. It makes you wonder.
Yeah, maybe you were right, Chester. With a woman like that, love might be kind of mournful.
Thank you.
So I just give my rope a couple of turns around that juniper stump, and I jerk back on it.
Lawson?
Oh, hi, Marshal.
I wonder if I could see you for a minute, huh?
Yeah, sure. Be right back, boys. What's on your mind, Marshal?
Lawson, I just ran into Ms. Morley in the street outside.
You did?
Yeah, I suggested she go home. She's got no business being down here this time of night. It might be a good idea if you'd tell her that, huh?
Seems to me that's up to her husband.
Look, you're new here, Lawson. I guess you didn't know Fred Curtis and the Santa Fe Kid.
I heard about it. A couple of fools, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I guess they were, after they met Ms. Morley.
Hey, look, Marshal, what's your stake in this?
I got no stake. What Ms. Morley does is her own business, as long as it doesn't cause any trouble. I'm just trying to keep her peace, that's all.
I feel kind of sorry for her, that's all. Al treats her like a dog.
Uh-huh. Fred and the Kid used to talk the same way.
Like I said, a couple of fools. I'm not.
I hope not.
See you around, Marshal.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, I would think so. Sure.
Hi, Kitty. Could I speak to you?
Oh, sure, Matt. Excuse me, boys. I'll be back.
All right. Hurry back now.
What, Matt?
Kitty, has Al Morley been in tonight?
Oh, no. I haven't seen him, Matt. Should he have been around?
Oh, not necessarily. He and Lawson are riding out around midnight on a cattle buying trip. I just thought they might be meeting here.
Oh, well, not yet anyway. Jesse Wells would know what the plans are, though.
Jesse Wells?
Yeah, the bartender down there at the end, the young one. You know him.
Oh, yeah, sure. Why would he know?
Well, he's going along. I'll ask him to help out there. Going to follow the Lazy Bee Roundup. Try to get in ahead of the buyers from Chicago.
Oh, yeah. He's a nice-looking kid. I wonder if,
Yeah, he's another friend of Ava's.
Marshal Dillon. Oh, come on. Wake up, Marshal.
All right. Take it easy. Who is it?
Jesse Wells, Marshal. Open the door.
All right, just a second till I get it.
What's the trouble, Wells?
Al Morley, Marshal. And you better get your horse, because we got to ride back out there.
Out where? What happened?
Buffalo Flats. We camped there to wait for the roundup crew. And Al's dead, Marshal. He's knifed in the back.
Did you do it?
No. It was Red Lawson. He knifed Al and he stole the money we were going to use to buy cattle.
What in the world is going on, Mr. Dillon?
You better saddle up, Chester. We got a ride.
What's the trouble?
The usual. Nothing new but the names. Seems Red Lawson turned out to be a fool in spite of himself.
Over this way, Marshal. Camp is right there by that plum thicket.
Right.
Be daylight in another 20 minutes.
Hello, boy. Oh. He's laying over there by the bushes.
Yeah, I see him. Whose knife is it, Jesse?
It's Al's. We were all asleep. We built a fire, made some coffee, and then turned in. When wait for daylight, the Lazy Bee Bunch planned to work their stock up this way.
I see. Here, Chester.
Wrap the knife in something and hang on to it, huh?
Yes, Mr. Dillon.
Now, go on, Jesse. What happened?
Well, like I said, Marshal Dillon, we were all asleep. I guess it was the sound of the horse's hooves woke me up.
Mm-hmm.
Red Lawson, he was pulling out. Well, I run over to Al, shook him to wake him up and tell him. Then I saw the knife. He was dead.
Where were you sleeping, Jesse?
Right about here, I guess. Red was across the fire over there, and Al was where he's laying now.
What about the money? How'd you know it was gone?
Well, I thought about it right off, and I figured that's why Red done it. Al was carrying about $10,000 in a little leather sack he'd stuck under the blanket before we'd gone to sleep. So I went and looked for it. It was gone.
You figure Red killed him for the money, then?
Well, sure. Of course, I doubt he meant it, though. I think Red was trying to ease the sack out from under the blanket when Al woke up and caught him.
Yeah, it's possible.
Be light enough to start tracking him in a few minutes, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, sun's poking up over there now. Looks like it's going to be a clear day. Which way'd Lawson head out, Jesse?
East. Seemed to be following the wagon tracks.
Odds are bad, Mr. Dillon. He's got quite a start on us.
Yeah, too much of a start. Well, let's load the pack mule, Chester. I think we'll ride back into Dodge and then take the train from there to Abilene, then work back from the east.
Say, that's a good idea. Lawson probably won't be expecting anybody ahead of him.
I can't understand it. I just can't understand how anybody could do a thing like this.
It sounds like a meadowlark, Chester.
Yes, sir. He just flew into those bushes.
Red seemed a pretty nice fellow, as far as I could tell.
It's a funny time of year for a meadowlark, isn't it?
Guess $10,000 was just too much temptation, huh?
Oh, some of them hangs around all winter, Mr. Dillon.
That sure sounds a lot better than that coyote, Howlin'.
Mm.
All right, Chester. Get a hold of his feet. Let's load him up.
Sumac Creek water tanks right around the bend up ahead of us there.
How long we stop here?
Oh, about 5 minutes. Just long enough to take on water. Might as well relax, Marshal. It's long ways yet to Abilene. Why, we ain't but 24 miles from Dodge City.
Feels more like 100. These seats are harder than a saddle.
Yeah. This here fella you boys looking for, I guess he's a real mean enough.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Mean enough.
Well, it's just like I always say, this prairie country ain't never gonna be a law-abiding place to live. Well, every time I pull out of Kansas City on the Northwest, I'm expecting every minute to be shot or hung or scalped.
Chester.
What's the matter, Mr. Dillon?
Look out the window here. Around the bend there by the water tank.
Huh. Looks like we don't have to go to Abilene.
Only some fella waiting to catch a train, I guess. You boys recognize...
Is he the one?
Yeah.
His horse is tied there by the tank. Must have decided on a quicker way of traveling.
Yeah, it looks that way. All right, Chester, he won't be expecting us. Let's get out in the vestibule and then drop off and take him as soon as the train stops.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Marshal, whatever you do, don't let him get on this train.
Just keep the passengers away from the windows.
In a way, it's too bad, Mr. Dillon. Miss Morley would have really enjoyed that $10,000.
You're guessing, Chester. And he hasn't seen us yet. All right, let's go.
Lawson, get your hands up.
No.
You're under arrest. Get your hands up.
No.
He's running for his horse, Mr. Dillon.
Lawson!
He's going to fight.
You can't get away on foot, Lawson.
All right, that's the first portion of Gunsmoke going back to November 14th, 1952 with the Square Triangle starring William Conrad. Let's take a break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. So, you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
This radio show, the WGN Radio Theater, which we have been on the air for 105 episodes of, has a podcast.
Are you sure?
I am super sure.
You know how to get through the WGN Radio app?
All I know is about a half an hour after the show goes off the air. So we go off the air at 2:00 in the morning on Saturday and Sundays, and about a half hour later,
it's up.
The podcast is up because Elif, our producer, is one of the hardest working people in show business. She sticks around here and she gets that podcast up. And halfway home, I tune it in. I Bluetooth it.
You know what? She posted before the show ends. That's how she does it.
What?
She gets the whole thing posted even before we're done.
Yeah, she can go into the future. She has a time machine.
Yeah.
But she does a great job, and that podcast stays up there for eternity.
Forever.
Yeah. So if you ever miss this show, that's all you have to do is podcast
it. You tell us how to get to the podcast?
Well, I do it differently than you do, because you and I are from polar opposites of the universe.
You can do it your way.
Lisa's from Uranus, and I'm from Venus. That's how that
something
works.
Something like that.
And
or Mars or something.
I'm from Mars. You're from Uranus.
No, that's not it either.
Yeah,
thanks a lot.
I'm pretty sure that's where you're from.
Yeah,
I'm pretty positive of that.
Good.
So I just Google WGN Radio Theater, and then I type in the number 105,
that'll
which is
work.
This one. And then that's it.
That's fine.
And then you do what?
I go to WGNradio.com.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, when Lisa and I come back here in just like 20-something hours, we have three more radio shows. And boy, you're going to like these. Nightbeat with Frank Lovejoy as the star of that. Yeah, Randy Stone. And then My Friend Irma, which you love because it's kind of comedy.
It's funny.
Funny. She's funny.
Yeah.
And then Lights Out, one of the scariest radio shows of all time. You don't want to miss that. That's tonight, starting at 11 p.m. on the WGN Radio Theater. And you know what? That will be program 106.
Yes.
Pretty good. I
got
was able
it.
To... I had a look at
you
a calculator.
You were able to add one to that 105.
I had to use a calculator, but I was
but
able to
it.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
All right, let's get now back to this episode of Gunsmoke.
Larson!
Come on, Chester.
That's a cutting it awful thin, Mr. Dillon. Giving a man three chances before you haul down on him?
We're still on our feet. He's not.
Yeah, but it's a pushing the odds, though.
Yeah, I guess. All right, pick up his gun there, will you?
Yes.
Lawson?
He's still alive, Mr. Dillon.
Can you hear me, Lawson?
Sure. Sure, I can hear you. There's a sack of money. Looks like it fell out of his coat.
Yeah, I see it. Lawson, there's no doctor on the train. We're going to try to stop the bleeding and do the best we can for you. There'll be a train back toward Dodge City in about a half hour. We'll wait for it. Is that all right with you?
I don't have any choice, do I?
No, I guess you don't. You made your choice last night. Was she worth it?
That's a bad one, Matt. Yes, I'd say the bullet's lying right in against his heart.
I just tried to wing him, Doc, but we were both moving. You can't always call him, you know.
No, I guess not. Well, I'm afraid that's about all I can do for him, Matt.
It's not enough, is that it?
He won't live an hour.
Yeah, I wish he was conscious. I want to talk to him.
Well, the stimulant might take effect, and then again might not. With this kind of a case, you never know. What is it you're after, Matt?
Ms. Morley.
Accessory before the fact?
She could have been.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a broken-down old man, Matt, but if that woman rolled her eyes at me just once... Well, I do not know. I just might. Matt.
Yeah. Lawson? Lawson, can you talk? Can you hear me, Lawson?
Yeah. Sure.
Was Ms. Morley in on it?
Nobody was in on it.
Did she know you were going to do it?
She had nothing to do with it.
Was she going to meet you somewhere later?
She had nothing to do with it. It was my idea. Nobody else.
Lawson, listen to me. You're dying. Do you know that?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I can feel it. She wasn't in on it.
All right. That's the way you want it. At least Al won't treat her like a dog anymore.
What do you mean?
I mean a dead man can't bother anybody.
Al?
You ought to know. You killed him.
No. No. No.
What?
He was asleep. I took the money and rode away. And they were both asleep. I didn't touch him.
You're telling the truth.
I swear I didn't kill him. I only stole the money and I didn't get...
Yeah, guess I was wrong, Matt. The bullet was closer to his heart than I thought.
Yeah. And I was wrong about something myself, Doc. I thought this was the end of it. Now it's wide open again. Wide open.
I don't see why you got me here just to ask the same things all over again, Marshal, because I told you how it happened.
Yeah, I know,
Jesse. You caught Red Lawson with the money on him. Now, what more proof do you need?
It only proves he took the money, Jesse. It doesn't prove he killed Al.
What do you mean?
Chester, you better punch that fire up over there a little, huh?
Does seem to be getting chilly in here.
Now, what do you mean by that, Marshal?
You killed Al yourself, didn't you, Jesse?
You're out of your mind.
You woke up and saw Red steal the money and take off, and it gave you ideas. You slipped over and knifed Al in his sleep. You knew Lawson had got the blame for it.
Well, sure. Sure, because he did it.
He said he didn't.
Dang stove.
Well, Marshal, did you expect him to tell the truth?
He was dying, Jesse. Knew he was dying. I think he told the truth.
I see. His word against mine. Word of a thief.
I didn't say I could prove it, Jesse. But you did it, though. We both know that. And sooner or later, I'm going to get you for it. Yeah. Chester, I think it'd draw better if you'd open the damper.
Quiet night, Mr. Dillon.
It was a quiet night last night.
And two men who were alive last night are gone tonight. Sure makes you stop and wonder.
Well, at least one thing hasn't changed. That coyote's still there.
I guess there'll always be coyotes around, Mr. Dillon. What are you going to do about Jesse Wells?
Oh, I don't know, Chester. He's guilty. You can see it written all over him. But there'd be no use bringing him in. I haven't got one piece of evidence. I don't know.
Yes, sir. She's quite a woman. Mercy. Quite a woman.
Yeah, she is that all right.
Matt, is that you?
Good evening, Ms. Morley. Who are you looking for tonight? Can't be Red Lawson. He's dead.
So is my husband. You forgotten?
My deepest sympathy.
Don't bother. You know better. I am sorry about Red, though. He was nice. You're the one who did it, aren't you, Matt?
Yeah. Yeah, I killed him. For you. I couldn't do anything else.
I don't know why you say for me. It wasn't my fault.
Yeah, sure, I know.
You know. You don't know anything. You don't know how it feels to sit in a house alone with your husband dead. No one in town coming near you. Like he was poison or something. Sure, I don't feel sorry about Al, but I would have once. He's the one who changed me, made me feel different.
I know it wasn't your fault.
And you didn't even come to tell me he was dead. Why not? It's It's part of your job, isn't it?
I didn't come and tell you, Miss Morley, because I figured that you'd... Chester?
Yes, sir?
Would you mind walking on ahead? I'll meet you on the Texas Trail in a few minutes.
Well, I... All right, Mr. Dillon, if you say so.
Why'd you send him away, Matt?
I was just wondering if you were going to be home later tonight.
Well, I could be.
Around 10 o'clock, say?
Sure, Matt. I'll be there.
Hiya, Kitty.
Chester and I were trying to think of some way to rescue you from Ava's clutches.
Only one thing, though, Mr. Dillon. I wasn't sure you wanted to be rescued.
Kitty, has Doc been in tonight?
Oh, I haven't seen him, Matt.
Chester, will you see if you can find him and have him meet me here?
Yes, sir. Right away, Mr. Dillon.
Kitty,
Yeah?
I wonder if you'd help me with something.
Well, sure, Matt. What?
Drop a hint to that bartender, Jesse Wells, that it... might be smart to slip out of here and pay a visit to Ms. Morley's around, oh, say, 9:45 tonight.
All right. Is it anything you can talk about?
I don't exactly know how to talk about it, Kitty. I got a murder on my hands. I know who the killer is, and I can't touch him.
So?
So I'm gonna try to make him touch me.
Oh. All right, Matt. I'll take care of it. Will you be around for a while?
Yeah. I'll be here till about 10. It's Matt Dillon. Who'd you think?
Just a minute.
Well, hurry up. Let me in.
All right, Dillon. Come on in.
Well, Jesse, I thought you were working.
I was, till just a few minutes ago. Well, what's on your mind?
I think Mr. Dillon probably wants to ask me some questions or something.
Yeah. I do, as a matter of fact. Jesse Wells, for instance.
What?
He didn't tell me he was going to be here, Ava.
Well, I...
What do you mean she didn't tell you? Wait, Ava, what about this? You were expecting him. You knew he was coming.
Of course she knew I was coming.
You and Matt Dillon. For how long? And what kind of a fool does that make me?
I'm afraid you were born a fool, Jesse. That's why she picked you.
She's so wonderful, you said, if only Al didn't stand in our way.
I didn't tell you to kill him. I didn't mention it once.
You didn't have to. Just kept dropping hints, leading me on. And all the time, you and Matt Dillon.
She's too smart for you, Jesse. You should have realized that.
Yeah. And instead, I played right into your hands. Both of you.
How, Jesse?
Killing Al, getting him out of your way, giving the two of you a clear field.
You're under arrest for murder, Jesse.
What? Oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you? Both of you would. Sit around and laugh about it while you're waiting for me to hang.
I said you're under arrest. Now hand over your gun.
No, you don't, Dillon. You're not going to carry it that far. You're not taking me in for something both of you wanted me to do.
Hand over your gun, Jesse.
You want my gun, you got to take it away from me.
Get away from the door.
Oh, sure, I'll get away from it. Hold it, Mr. Wells! Stop it! Shit!
Are you all right, Chester?
Yes, sir.
It was close, but he missed me.
Well, you two didn't miss him. I don't know which one of you fired first, but either bullet would have done it.
Well, you got his confession, all right, Mr. Dillon. Doc and I heard every word from the front porch there.
We sure did. Only one thing, though, Matt. He didn't implicate the woman in it.
Yeah, I know. Will you take charge, Doc?
Oh, sure. Be glad to. Part of my job, you know.
Matt.
All right, Chester, let's go.
Matt? Could I see you for a minute before you go? Matt?
What's it add up to, Mr. Dillon? Three men have been killed since the same time last night.
Yeah.
And you know, Mr. Dillon, I think maybe it's kind of all her fault. And you can't pin a thing on her. My.
Well, there's one lucky thing. There aren't many women like her.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Lillian Bayef, with Harry Bartell, Lawrence Dobkin, and Jack Crucian. Parley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Remember, it's yours for thrills on tomorrow night's exciting adventure with Tarzan, created by Edgar Rice Burroughs and brought to you now by CBS Radio. Clancy Cassell speaking. And remember, Broadway's My Beat brings you startling mysteries Saturday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
That is some good Western drama there on Gunsmoke, November 14th, 1952, with the Square Triangle starring William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. In that cast, a terrific cast, Georgia Ellis, Harry Bartell, Howard McNear, Jack Crucian, Lawrence Dobkin, Les Crutchfield did the writing on that, Lillian Bayef, Parley Bear. That is one great cast, and it was produced and directed by Norman McDonald, as heard on CBS. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Hey, Lisa, let's do a live promo for ourselves.
Great.
Because we come back here in a few hours. Let's see, like 21 hours? 21 hours.
Yeah.
All right, so let's do a live promo. Let's
Great.
Try this,
Go
right?
For it.
All right, so hi, I'm Carl Amari.
Hi, I'm Lisa Wolf.
And tonight on the WGN Radio Theater, we have three more classic radio shows. We have Nightbeat,
My Friend Irma,
and Lights Out.
Stay with us. See you tonight.
Make sure you're here on And Roger, could you throw a little promo plug in there or something, Raj? Tonight on WG, something like that. That's tonight.
Well, you catch me.
All right, let's try it again.
Let's start over.
We'll edit it. We can edit it
Well,
in
let's
post.
Start. Let's start over.
We can do it. All right.
All right. Right. So, hey, I'm Carl Amari.
I'm Lisa Wolf.
And tonight on the WGN Radio Theater, we have Nightbeat,
My Friend Irma,
and Lights Out.
And we'll wrap up the Air and Water Show for you on the WGN News. So join us, won't you?
What?
What?
What is that? Wait, you're not in.
We were hoping for a WGN Radio Theater promo.
Yeah, like join
you,
Carl and
you
Lisa
want,
at 11.
You want me to be the?
To be our announcer.
Well, we don't we don't have promos on the air, so we thought we'd do one live.
Can we try one more time?
All right, try one more time.
Let's do this.
No.
Okay.
Yes.
No, we don't. I can't do it again. It's enough.
WGN enough Radio already. Theater. At
you know what?
O'clock
more
WGN
importantly,
Radio.
We have David Plyer in the studio.
Good
That's
morning.
Much more important.
What's happening, guys?
What's up? Roger did not follow the lead there.
I was
at all.
A little unclear
He's a little
on the
slow
instructions.
Tonight. That's okay, Roger.
With
we'll
too
get
much
you back
chocolate.
Tonight.
I like the self-promotion, Roger. That's what you're supposed to do. If you don't promote yourself, who's going to, right?
That's right.
David, we heard a promo for you that you have the great
Don Rickles
on tonight.
He's back. Like I tried to get this guy for years, and now I get him twice in the last
That's
three or four
amazing.
Months.
Yeah. That's
you know
great.
What? He he was, whose birthday is it?
It's Carl's.
Oh, Carl, happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, my gosh, fantastic.
39.
39, Jack Benny, 39. Yeah, Don, we were just backstage in Vegas, and we let some tape roll, and he was talking about when the mob rang Vegas. I mean, are you a Vegas guy? Do you go to Vegas?
Oh, gosh, love it, love it.
But here's the thing. It's not like it used to be, especially from his era. And he said, you know, what really bothers him is how people dress now down there and why there's kids running around at 1 o'clock in the morning. And he said it was much better than when the mob ran it.